On December 7th, 2020, Charles "Chuck" Yeager passed away. Yeager's best known for breaking the sound barrier in a Bell X-1 on October 14th, 1947. He also shot down 13 enemy aircraft in World War II, and after the war became the world's most famous test pilot, logging more than 10,000 hours in 155 aircraft types. Today I'm joined by retired U.S. Air Force Colonel Jay Deeney to talk the life and legacy of Chuck Yeager. This is the Air Minded Podcast. Welcome, listeners, and thanks again for tuning into the Air Minded Podcast. I'm your host, Tyson Wetzel. This episode, we're going to be talking about the life and legacy of General Chuck Yeager. Just as a note, I did a Zoom interview with an old friend of mine, a former instructor, and one of my comrades on the Joint Staff, Colonel retired Jay Focker Deeney. In his retirement, Colonel Deeney has moved out to a farm, and we had a few internet issues based on what he called his rural internet. I tried to clean it up in editing, but as I mentioned in the last episode, still early on in the podcasting process. So if you hear some awkward cuts, for that I apologize, and I hope that I will be continue to get better at the editing process. Kind of on that note, I want to thank all of you. I've had really great feedback and interaction from listeners on social media and reviews on iTunes, and I really can't thank you enough. I've been trying to internalize some of those comments and try to make each successive episode a little bit better. We've had hundreds of listens to both the prologue and the Operation Bolo episode, far exceeding my modest expectations for this little podcast. So I'm going to keep going. I hope to continue to improve the product for all you listeners out there. This episode is going to be a little bit more of the model that you will get in future episodes. I will be talking in most episodes to guests, and we'll be talking about their stories or their perspectives or point of views. So there's going to be a lot less of the episodes like the last one, the Operation Bolo episode, with me just kind of talking into a microphone. There'll continue to be a few of those, but this is really going to be the models. I'm going to be talking to some of the air-minded folks that I know and have a perspective on the topic of the day. And the last note I will say is this was not a planned episode. When I was starting to think about the episodes that I wanted to roll out early in the series here, I knew that I wanted to start with Operation Bolo, and that would take me into early January, which would lead into the 30th anniversary of Desert Storm, so I figured episode 2 would be on Desert Storm. And in December, I got the news that General Yeager had passed away. And I thought about how I wanted to talk about that. I thought about maybe just a note at the beginning of the Operation Bolo episode. But I really thought that Yeager's passing was important enough to not just cover it in a short time frame. I really wanted to do a deep dive on the life and legacy of this Air Force and truly aviation legend. And that's what this episode is. It's supposed to talk a little bit more about what Yeager did and then also his enduring importance and why I think it's important that we remember what he did a lot more than just breaking the sound barrier. So with that said, let's get on to my interview with Colonel Jay Deeney. On December 7th, Brigadier General Chuck Yeager's second wife, Victoria, announced his passing at the age of 97. Condolences, messages, and stories flooded social media in the days that followed. Not only was Yeager an aviation giant, he transcended the field of aviation to become a national hero and a role model to tens of thousands of young Americans. One of those is with me today. Welcome to Colonel Retired Jay Focker Deeney. First off, you're my first guest, but I'm going to create the standard of asking what you're drinking. I have a Gentleman Jack and Coke Zero, which is my go-to. Your hands seem to be empty. Are you you got anything for today's conversation?
Nope. I got a Bombay and tonic here, Gorilla.
All right. Sounds good. All right. So I will be using your call sign, and I just a note to some of the listeners. You are named around the time of Meet the Parents. So you're named after the main character, Focker. So if they hear me using that term a lot, I don't want people to think this is, you know, some sort of R-rated or worse podcast. Anyways, welcome, Focker. You are a military history junkie. I asked you to come on here because in the days after Yeager's passing, he had a Facebook post that said he was a childhood idol of yours. So I thought I'd have you on to talk about what Chuck Yeager kind of meant to you and what you think his legacy is. So first off, welcome. And why don't you start with your Air Force origin story and how you became interested in military history in general and aviation history in particular.
Okay, thanks, Gorilla. So first I would say, like, kind of my actual interest in history probably precedes my Air Force story a little bit. So I grew up in a Naval Reserve family. My dad was active duty. He was an enlisted A6 maintainer in the Vietnam War. And then he got out of the active duty, and then he went to the Naval Reserves and worked in P3s for over 20 years. And so I was interested in the Navy, actually. And so I liked aviation. I liked aviation history. And actually, my goal in life was actually to go to the Naval Academy. And
these are all things that I didn't know about you. I did not know a Navy was the path. All right. Well,
journey of discovery, right? So, so that was kind of so I was interested in aviation, and I liked aviation history, and but I was also very kind of interested in engineering, and so I wanted to study aerospace engineering, and so all those things were kind of pushing me towards wanting to go to the Naval Academy. And that was kind of my singular focus growing up. And then lo and behold, I got an offer or I guess a nomination to go to the Naval Academy. And I got a Navy ROTC scholarship, and I failed my physical for my eyes. So the Navy wouldn't take me. The Coast Guard wouldn't take me, but the Air Force was willing to waive my vision. And so that is my Air Force story. So flash forward, I got a ROTC scholarship to Penn State, Det 720. And so I showed up there in 1993 and started our Air Force ROTC and studied aerospace engineering and graduated in 98. I was on the 5-year program. Program. No. They said, hey, you're going to graduate in 4 years. And I said, yeah, that's what you do. It's college. And they said, oh, well, you can take your time here. And so because they said you can take your time here, they actually offered this military studies minor at Penn State, which was like ROTC classes plus pick a few more. And in the pick a few more category, they offered some history classes, military history classes. And there was actually two professors at Penn State, this guy named Dr. Spielvogel, who taught a history of Nazi Germany class, and then Dr. Carol Reardon, who taught some military history classes. So when I took their classes, I would say that's when I kind of got hooked. So anyway, that's how I got interested in military history, and this kind of stuck ever since.
All right. So, well, I know you, certainly you were, we've worked together a couple of times. You're one of my instructors out of the weapons school at Nellis. And you retired just, well, I guess 18 months ago now.
September 30th of 19 was my last day in uniform. Yeah.
Okay. So just over a year ago. All right. Well, we're here to talk about Chuck Yeager. So, in the intro, I kind of went over a few of his career highlights. Of course, he is most well known for breaking the sound barrier in 1947, double ace in World War II, including becoming an ace in a day, shooting down 5 ME-109s in a single day in 1944. He's one of the first Americans to shoot down a jet fighter, the ME-262. Became a test pilot after the war, known as the fastest man alive. As I was searching his multiple bios, over 10,000 hours in 155 aircraft types, which is just incredible. Commanded F-86 squadron, F-100 squadron, commandant of the Air Force Aerospace Research Pilot School, commanded a wing at Clark Air Base in the Philippines, commanded the 4th Tactical Fighter Wing at Seymour Johnson, just a bunch of things that he did, retired as a brigadier general as the director of aerospace safety for the Air Force Inspection and Safety Center. So that's kind of the big picture of what he's done. Of course, everybody knows him for breaking the sound barrier. So let's kind of go to that. What is it about the sound barrier in the mid-40s that made this such a big deal in that transcended aviation history and made him a national hero in America?
So, you know, obviously, if you read Yeager's book or any other books about kind of X-planes, you know, after World War II, people were aware of the challenges of compressibility and, you know, approaching supersonic flight. And so they knew that was going to be a problem as they left the Second World War. And really, you know, as the Germans developed the ME-262 and then we later developed the P-80, I think people realized this was going to be an issue. And I think in Yeager's case, the thing that was kind of fascinating, and I think one of my big takeaways about him, is that he really ended up just kind of being the right guy at the right place with that just did his job very well when he was given opportunities, right? So doors opened and he was ready to step through them when they presented opportunities. whether that was in his kind of combat service in World War II, or, you know, after World War II, when you went up to Wright Patt as kind of a maintenance test pilot, that continued to open doors for him and ultimately led him out to Muroc, right? Later Edwards, in 1947, to kind of break the sound barrier.
Yeah, and you mentioned being at the right place at the right time, and he very famously didn't have a college degree, and that's talked about a little bit in both the book and the movie, The Right Stuff, and how he was kind of looked down upon. He certainly always kept a chip on his shoulder. It even comes out in his own autobiography, but he was just there to work hard. He flew more than everybody else, and he was recognized for being excellent at his craft, and that's why he was eventually chosen by Major General Boyd to be the test pilot for the X-1 and to break the sound barrier. So we talked a little bit about a couple of the books that I would consider the main books that everybody talks about on this subject. So the first is Yeager's own autobiography titled Yeager. It is, I think that is kind of the gateway drug for reading about aviation pioneers, if you will. So you have a beat up old copy. This was a book that I took off of my dad's bookshelf in, I don't know, late 80s, early 90s, and read about it well before I went to college. And that's maybe the first aviation book that I ever read. And then, of course, Tom Wolfe's The Right Stuff. Eventually turned into a movie, another excellent book, and now apparently a series as well on Disney Plus, which I haven't checked out. Either of those books, I know you've read both of them, but in particular, Yeager's autobiography. You know, anything about that book that really struck you?
Yeah, so that book came out in 1985, so I was 10 in 1985, and back then I was in a habit of reading books like over and over and over again. And what I liked about that book was, I forget who the co-author was, like Leo Janus or Janos or something like that.
You got it.
But it was super easy to read. And he also kind of had other people in his life that were around him with commentary throughout the book. So it had a pretty folksy feel to it. So it was an easy read. And you alluded to kind of in your opening remarks, right? Like the span of his career, but put it this way, I think in 2020, if anybody did almost any facet of what General Yeager did, we would pretty much be in awe of him, right? Like his World War II combat record in the air alone is pretty, you know, 11 and a half kills, or the 5 kills in one day, or the ME-262 kill. All of those by themselves are pretty awesome. But then he was also like combat evader, right? And then the first combat evader to get returned to flying status. So that,
those chapters in the book about him evading are fantastic. Yeah.
So like in my case, when you're 10-year-old Jay Deeney in Northeast Philly and you're reading this stuff, like this is, you know, I mean, this is way cooler than reading about, you know, or put it this way, like kids my age were like big fans of like Michael Schmidt and the Phillies, and that was also cool. But I kind of gravitated towards Chuck Yeager, kind of being my, other than my dad, my grandfathers and stuff like that, he was kind of a guy that I was pretty into. And then, you know, you get into the other stuff, obviously the whole test career. I mean, the X-1, as big as that was in the sound barrier, that was just one of many things that he did. And he goes into that in the book. And then there's just other stuff in there too, like, you know, he wrote a whole second book about just his stuff he does as an outdoorsman. He's big into like fishing and hunting and stuff like that. So just kind of a fascinating guy all around. And so I found the whole, you know, both of the books pretty fascinating. And I think another thing that was neat about him, you know, we talked before about him being a bit of a cultural phenomenon, but there was a whole lot of, like you said, Yeager drumbeat in the late 70s to through the mid 80s, right? You had the Wolf book in 79, you had the movie in 83, you had Yeager's biography in 85, and then you had him on all the AC Delco commercials throughout the 80s, right? He was everywhere. So
Air Force pilot as a pitch man, but he was, I mean, he was moving product like any kind of athlete or, you know, famous athlete.
He was crazy. But he was a relatable, normal, kind of somewhat grandfatherly kind of guy at that point in his life. So So I don't know. I mean, I was drawn to him certainly. And, you know, here we are how many years later, and I've heard some people quibble about, like, maybe he wasn't the most approachable guy at the end of his life. I think we've probably heard some of that stuff, but, I don't know, but it was a pretty amazing life lived, and, I'm still a fan, big fan. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if he was a little bit rough around the edges, I don't think that's really the lasting legacy of Chuck Yeager. I think some of the things he did, and I would highly recommend for any listeners who haven't read his autobiography, it is awesome. It is a great read, really, really easy and really fun to read. I kind of feel a little bit lucky. I just read it about 3 months ago, just because it was something I hadn't read in almost 30 years, probably something like that. And just decided to pick up a beat up copy at a used bookstore and gave it a read. And it is just as readable as it was, you know, when I read it three decades ago. And there's so much that you forget about. And even as I was preparing my notes for this conversation, I forgot about the when he was evading through France and Spain. And that is a great story as well. And then comes back and starts flying again. Just amazing. I did want to move on to, so I mentioned he flew 155 different types. And in the book, he talks about if there was an aircraft at Muroc, you know, eventually Edwards, I mean, he was flying it. He wanted to be the first one there. And he later says, you know, the right stuff is a little bit made up by Tom Wolfe. If there's any right stuff, it's really whoever has the most experience, that's what gives you the right stuff. Yeah. One of the aircraft that he flew that I think you and I are both very interested in, the MiG-15. So some of our listeners are going to be familiar with Constant Peg, that program where the Air Force flew Soviet built aircraft, including MiG-17s, MiG-21s, MiG-23s. And I'm going to later in the spring, I will be doing a podcast on Constant Peg. But even before that program, we were doing foreign material exploitation programs on captured MiGs, Yeager, one of the first pilots of that. So, you know, what do you know about him flying the MiG-15?
Well, I mean, just primarily what he talks about in the book a little bit, but I think one of the things that's pretty neat about that is, you know, we both had the opportunity to work with Evil Peck at Nellis, and, you know, I've read the Constant Peg books and the Red Eagles book, which is another excellent book about the topic. You know, in that case, there's an entire airfield and infrastructure built to do the training and the exploitation, right? In Yeager's case, right, they get this MiG-15 defector, and they basically go out and they do a field FME. And there's virtually no safety factor built into it. There's no instrumentation. There's just, you know, hop in this, look around. Yeah, there's the white, you know, spin recovery line like in every other MiG product in the front, and takes it out and brings it out. I think it was in Okinawa, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, it's pretty amazing that I think one of the takeaways when you read all of his books is like an amazing life, and you just can't do stuff like that anymore. Or you know what I mean? Like
you would never be able. Yes. That is not how the Air Force works these days. You're not taking off unless there is a written TO and you are very familiar with it, and you got all the emergency pages ready to go. But there's also a reason why he was picked over a lot of other test pilots to fly the MiG-15, which all comes back to the experience. He flew virtually every aircraft that we built or got our hands on, and he flew it to the edge as he understood it. And he was able to recover aircraft that maybe others wouldn't, just because it was experience. And he talks a lot about many of the close calls he had in his life, and they were numerous. And it was not luck. He says that it is really just experience and knowing what to try, when to try. And that's why he was trusted with this national asset, having a MiG-15 that we'd never had our hands on. There was, you know, he was the guy that would go fly that aircraft. So that's pretty awesome. I guess we've talked a lot about who Yeager was, the cultural phenomenon that he was. What do you think the lasting legacy of Chuck Yeager is?
I think his place in history will remain cemented. Additional pour. Good work there, my friend.
Well, you know, you're a fascinating character. You made me
there. You go. There you go.
Another cocktail.
And I don't have one ready at hand. I'm kicking myself now. I think that he has earned a place in Air Force and American history that will last for a long time, right? For all the things we talked about, combat record, test record, FME, Vietnam service, you know, after World War II, all of that. But honestly, I actually look at him and I think that more than anything, looking back, I think that guy is a textbook example of kind of the greatest generation American dream, right? He grew up in dirt poor Appalachia in West Virginia. I mean, God talks about in his book, right?
Absolutely, he does.
We wore shoes one day a week. We wore shoes. We wore them to church and we took them off again. And he talks about in his book about some suffering growing up. He had a brother, I think, that died, or a sibling that died in the house due to a firearms accident. So, family was working hard. I mean, they had not an easy childhood, but not an unhappy childhood, because they didn't know any better, because they were, it was the Depression. It was tough. Enlisted in the Air Force, worked his way up because he worked hard. You know, he was competent. You know, we talked before about, didn't have a ton of formal education, but very, very mechanically inclined. So he understood all the things that were going on in his airplanes, and ultimately was good at his primary duty. And when opportunities presented himself, he was ready to capitalize. And I just think he's a great example of the American dream. And, I know it sounds a little bit cliche, but I do think that's a pretty awesome, I don't think you're going to see high school graduates rise to that level of prominence in the U.S. Air Force and be able to rack up 10,000 hours and break, aerospace research records. Right. I mean, those days are gone. So
they are gone. And I think what you're hitting on there is pretty important, is that he was an everyman. I mean, there was nothing special about his upbringing, and kind of quite the opposite. He came from, like you mentioned, and he mentioned, dirt poor beginnings, but he just worked hard, enlisted in the Army Air Forces, and eventually got a commission, got his wings, and then took off from there through hard work. He never really let that chip off of his shoulder, and in a lot of ways that was a good thing for him. We talk about his legacy. He is clearly, some people believe he's the greatest Air Force pilot that's ever lived. I guess maybe this, and there's an argument to be made there.
Yeah.
But certainly he's a legend and he should be celebrated. What do you think about the Air Force's, how it embraces Jaeger, or lack thereof? Do you think that we do enough to talk about him and keep the legacy of Chuck Jaeger going?
I don't know that the Air Force does a great job. I mean, I know that the state of West Virginia probably does a better job embracing him than the service does at times, to be completely honest with you. So
that may be a loaded question. This is something that I believe about our service, which is that we don't do a particularly good job of recognizing our own history. I spent a year in school at Quantico with the Marines. They love to talk about, being a Marine and their people, their battles, those things that they really embrace. And one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on here is I think you embrace Air Force history kind of the way I do. And I think we could do a lot better job. And I think,
absolutely.
Yeah, Jaeger's passing, though tragic, I mean, and a long life well lived at 97, but I think that's another opportunity for us to say, this is our history. I mean, he was there from the start. I mean, he broke the sound barrier a month into the Air Force as a service. He was there at the beginning. This is a legacy that we need to recognize, and we need to be teaching a lot better than we probably are.
I completely agree. Yep. Yep. But I think he's just one example of that, about the Air Force could do a better job just embracing our history and our heritage and making airmen more informed about the airmen that came before them.
Well, it's a little bit of a loaded question. Like I said, it's part of the reason why I want to do this podcast is shed a little bit of light on some of the things that I think are important in air power history. I'm a product of my environment, so it's going to be a little bit Air Force centric, U.S. Air Force centric, but we'll try to get stories about the greater field of aviation. But this was a story that I felt, this was not a podcast that I had necessarily planned to do, but when he passed last month or earlier this month, I thought it was something that I wanted to be able to talk about. And I appreciate you coming on, Fokker. This has been a good conversation. It's always a lot of fun. We're going to have you on again. I know when we talk Vietnam a little bit later in the year, but I get the feeling that I'm going to ask you to come on a few more times, and we will fight through the rural internet when we have you on Zoom. And maybe at some point when we're inoculated, we could actually, you know, I could come out to your farm and we could have a couple of cocktails and do this in person.
That would be awesome. I appreciate it, Gorilla, and it's been awesome being on with you.
Hey, Fokker, thanks a lot. I think I suffered through my first interview, or you suffered through my first attempt at an interview. Hopefully, I didn't screw it up too bad, and I can always edit out all of my screw-ups and leave some of yours. All right. Thanks, Fokker. I really appreciate it. Have a great night. Well, that does it for my interview with Colonel Retired Jay Fokker Deeney. I appreciate all you listeners out there for putting up with my amateur editing skills. I know it was a little choppy in places. I will continue to work on that. It's something that I hope to get better in future episodes. Thanks again also to Fokker Deeney for joining me. Hopefully it came through to all of you how much he absolutely loves aviation, air power history. He's going to be a great subject to have on a couple of more times. He and I were already talking about times that I'm looking forward to having him on and topics that we'll discuss in the future. Just as a reminder, the views expressed on this podcast are mine alone and do not reflect the official policy or position of the United States government, the Department of Defense, or the United States Air Force. Be sure to tune in next week for part one of a multi-episode arc to celebrate the 30th anniversary of Operation Desert Storm. Pretty excited to talk about that. In the meantime, be sure to subscribe or review the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And I'd encourage you to interact with me, ask questions, give feedback or suggestions. I got, again, a lot of great feedback and suggestions based off the Operation Bolo episode. Hopefully I was able to integrate some of that feedback and continue to make this a better podcast for all of you listeners out there. If you'd like to talk to me, either the website, airmindedpodcast.com, you can reach out via email, airmindedpodcast@gmail.com, or I'm active on social media at airmindedpod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. But that's it for today. Thanks for tuning in to the Air Minded Podcast. I am the Air Minded Gorilla, Tyson Wetzel, signing off and saying thanks for tuning in. This was the Air Minded Podcast.